Final argument of this morning is 824-0126, Western Prairie Human Services versus County of Benton. As all parties are aware, the Appellant's Counsel will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. I only see one respondent, so I assume there'll be no splitting of time. Respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever counsel for the appellant is ready, just approach the microphone, adjust to your level, and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you for taking the time to consider this appeal this morning. My name is Michelle Meyer and I represent Benton County Human Services. The issue today before the court is who is the county of financial responsibility for the foster care costs of Ashley Connor's children? The crux of that matter is where did Ms. Connor live on the day that the children became eligible for those services on November 3rd, 2022? The issue before the court is not Benton County did its job correctly when it made a referral for PSOP services. It's not whether or not it made the correct decision regarding commitment or about the reasons why Ms. Connor might have moved to Hope County. The plain language of the law directs us to look at derivative settlement since the individuals receiving the services are children. The county needs to first determine who the child lived with last, in non-excluded time status, the parent. Then it needs to determine where that parent lived on the date that they became eligible for those services. I would note that where the child was physically present does not impact the decision regarding derivative settlement, and is not relevant whether or not that human services may have made contact with that parent in the county. In order to determine where the parent resides, you have to look at the circumstances of the case. In this particular case, the legislature chose not to include an intent requirement, and it chose not to require a duration requirement. Again, looking at the circumstances in this case. And it is to reside in one county is to have an established abode in one county and not have an established abode in another county. In this case, on October 3rd, Benton County Human Services met with Ms. Connor, and she indicated at that time that on October 5th, she would be moving to Polk County. She moved and signed a year-long lease on October 5th. She moved her personal belongings, and she resided in that townhome for a period of time. On October 17th, there was contact made with Benton County Human Services again regarding a test that Ms. Ashley Connor had failed. But when Benton County reached out to her, she indicated that she was now living in Polk County. And through conversations with other individuals that had the children, they learned that she was still doctoring in St. Cloud and still going back and forth between St. Cloud. It became evident from the record that Ms. Connor was stuck in St. Cloud, was having issues of transportation, getting back and forth from one county to the next. However, she has always indicated that her plan was to return to Polk County.
But isn't your argument that intent doesn't matter?
Correct. I think it's a circumstance. I don't think it's a requirement that intent factor in.
So here's my question for you. And that's, if she had not signed this lease, where would her residence have been under the statute?
So you have many different people that are served by social services. You can have unhoused people. You can have.
That's really my question, is that the statute defines reside as established place of abode, which we subsequently interpreted to mean dwelling. So if she had not signed this lease in Polk County, where would have been her established place of abode under this statute? Because it's very unclear to me under the law what county is responsible for a person who's homeless. And I don't think that we can interpret the law in a way that says no county has a responsibility for homeless people.
Certainly. And I would 100% agree. And I think that's why they have several different definitions of county financial responsibility and why you have to review the circumstances of each case. In certain situations, you will have individuals that have signed a lease that have a dwelling, that own a house. And in situations like unhoused people, they might reside at a Salvation Army, which is an emergency shelter. They may live on the streets.
But isn't that exempt time?
Emergency shelters are not.
Okay, emergency shelters are not exempt time.
Well, is it the signing of a lease or is it moving into the area that you've leased that's important?
Well, I think it's the circumstances again. So let's say an individual has signed a lease but hasn't yet moved into that lease and has a competing lease in one county. So they're currently leasing a residence, have all their personal belongings, are staying in that place in County A, but they've indicated their intent to go to County B. However, let's pretend that they have a need for foster care services in the interim. They've expressed intent to move to County B, but County A is where they're currently still residing. They haven't moved to County B. So in that scenario, if we don't look at the intent, the fact that they're going to leave, that they have no present intent to stay, then it would be County A, because that's where they are when services were needed and necessary. And that's where their personal belongings are. That's where they're staying. That's where they have a lease. Now, let's say they just indicate that they plan on moving to County B, but they haven't signed a lease, they have nothing. And they have a lease, they have a dwelling, they have personal belongings, they're there. If they, again, need services in the interim before they move, clearly their intent is to leave, but they're still residing and have an established abode in County A. I think if you imply an intent...
But I think that my issue is, if we interpret established place of abode to mean that you have to have a physical dwelling, then wouldn't we be interpreting the statute to say no county has any responsibility for homeless individuals?
And I would argue that's why you cannot have an intent requirement, because homeless people may not reside in one county more than one night. And that is particularly the case in Benton, Stearns, and Sherburne County that all share a jurisdiction in St. Cloud.
But what do you do in the circumstance where, how else would you determine it then when you have a person who is homeless, what county they reside in, if they don't have a dwelling under the statute? Because, I mean, it really does seem to me like the argument that you are making is she signed a lease in this county, therefore that is her established place of abode. The argument that respondent is making is, she had not been to that place and she didn't have a way to get back there. Her intent to go back in the absence of any reasonable way of getting back there is not relevant, which is what you're also seem to be saying. And therefore her established place of abode had to have been in Benton County, because you can't look at her intent. You have to look at where she's physically present. And that's challenging because the statute would indicate that you need to have some kind of residence. And so I'm wrestling with, if she hadn't had the apartment, would Benton County have agreed that she was residing in Benton County despite the fact that she didn't have a dwelling?
Yes, we would have. And I want to make it clear.
So the only difference here is that there was a signed lease in both counties?
I think that, yes. So I think intent cannot be the standard, because we have unhoused people, we have chemically dependent people, we have mentally ill people. We may not know their intent of whether or not they plan to stay in a county. But in this particular case, and we look at all these circumstances, I believe that intent can be something that you consider if you have that information. She had signed a lease. She did have a dwelling. In this particular circumstance, she had moved to Glenwood. She had transportation issues.
Where did she move to Glenwood?
Huh?
Where did she move to Glenwood?
So she started out at the Salvation Army and notified Benton County Human Services that she was moving to Glenwood, Minnesota, which is in Polk County.
Yes.
On October 5th, she signed that lease in Glenwood County. Glenwood, Minnesota, Polk County. And she moved her things. She lived there. She made contact with her neighbors.
There. Where?
Glenwood, Minnesota.
Where in Glenwood?
In a townhome. Rented 6 20 I can't recall the street.
That's not the place of the lease.
That is the place of the lease.
So you say she physically moved to the place where she had signed the lease?
Yes.
And what day was that?
October 5th. Yep. So all of her personal belongings were there. Her children's personal belongings were there.
Did she live there? Did
yes. She... I'm sorry. Yes, she did. She had consumed food. She had created garbage. There were personal belongings that were strewn about the apartment.
Well, by the 17th, we know she's back in sick. I mean, the problem that we have with the record here is we don't actually know if she spent the night there. And we don't actually know. And to the extent we assume that she did because there was food there, which doesn't necessarily mean you spent the night. We don't know how many days she actually spent there. What we do know is that she was there to sign the lease and she moved her stuff in on the 5th. And we know that on the 17th, she was back in St. Cloud and that she probably didn't go back to Glenwood between the 17th and when the child was born on the 2nd, mm-hmm. right? I mean, right. I just want to make sure I have yes. the facts right. Yes. And yes. so we have a gap in time, right? We have a gap in time where we really don't know if she was in Glenwood or if she was in St. Cloud. We just know that at some point between October 5th and October 17th, she returned to St. Cloud.
Correct.
And didn't have a ride back.
Correct.
When we say St. Cloud, you're talking about East St. Cloud, Benton County Park?
She was in Sherburne County. She was in Stearns County. She was in Benton County. So she was residing on streets. She was residing at friends' places.
So to answer the question, we don't know whether she came back to live in Benton County.
Correct.
Could have been Stearns beside the river or Sherburne, the southeast side.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she was the night or the day that her child was born, she claimed that she had stayed with a friend the night before in Benton County. She then was arrested at a quick trip in Sherburne County and in the Sherburne County jail until noon on November 2nd. Then she ended up in Stearns County, where she then had her baby that night. And then against doctor's advice, she removed herself from the hospital. And at that time, I think things took a turn. But she ultimately had a dwelling.
There's no theory here about where do you have the most contacts.
It's just where the statute is based on circumstances. And
well, the statute is based on your place of abode. This is my concern is that we're stuck with a statute that says place of abode.
But abode usually means where you are and with the intent to stay there, doesn't it?
It's like
the intent to stay there is floating around here.
Well, you know, I guess I would turn you to other statutes. The legislature specifically.
Well, why shouldn't we look intent? If we're going to look to other statutes, then why wouldn't we rely on what we said in Clay County, which is that it's not just physical dwelling, but it's also intent to stay. I understand that other aspects of that case have been abrogated. I think abrogated by statute. But why isn't our statement of the law in Clay County that the definition of reside and the inclusion of the word abode means a physical place with intent to stay in that place? And why is that? Why shouldn't we apply that narrow principle of law from Clay County, which was a precedential decision from our court?
I would state that it was kind of a thrown in line. There was no examination of why that should be included, why the legislature didn't include it when it specifically included it in MA law, MFIP law, food support, voting, election laws. In those statutes, they specifically call out an intent requirement and a durational requirement. They specifically chose to say there's no durational requirement in this statute. They also did not require intent and instead based it on the circumstances and provided five different
Didn't we interpret it in 1992 to say that there's an intent requirement and the legislature hasn't changed it since? Isn't there also a principle of law that if we set it in 1992 and the legislature has done nothing to change it, that then the legislature has acquiesced to our interpretation of that term?
That is possible.
So applying that principle to the facts here, where do you come out?
I believe that she intended to stay in Pope County. And she made that evidently clear. So I argued that I don't believe there's an intent requirement, but if there is clearly evidence of intent to continue to reside in Pope County. Once she lost her children, I think things changed. But prior to that, her intent was always to get back.
That she in fact was residing in Pope County at some point.
Yes. Yes, I believe there, you know, how that that's the other issue with the intent requirement. A lot of times we're not going to have information regarding intent. We may have a parent that we know has a property or a dwelling in one location, but social services isn't seeking out.
Okay. The bigger issue in my view in this case is whether she actually ever resided in Polk County.
Well, she claims she did. She was there long enough to, again, have all of her personal belongings there, eat there.
Well, personal belongings and eating doesn't necessarily equate to reside, does it?
Well, but she doesn't have an established abode in any other county. So you look at where she has an established abode. She signed a lease. She's got her personal belongings there. She's been there. She's made contacts with neighbors. But there's no evidence of an established abode in any other county.
But this comes back to my question. If we adopt that analysis, then a homeless person doesn't have an abode in any county. An unhoused person does not have an abode in any county under the statute, if that's the interpretation that we would apply. And so I'm trying to figure out with the language that we have in the statute, we have to somehow encompass that unhoused people have are entitled to social services. And maybe you want to respond to this during your reply time. I am interested in how you would interpret the plain language of the statute itself in a manner that also encompasses unhoused people. Because my concern with this case is if we adopt your analysis, that it would somehow be interpreted to mean you have to have a physical house in order to reside anywhere.
Thank you. I'll respond.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Justin Anderson. I represent Western Prairie Human Services, which is a joint powers entity that provides social services for both Hope and Grant County. I would like to begin where the discussion with appellant left off with respect to Cass County.
Cass County?
The Cass County decision from 1992 from the Court of Appeals.
I was hoping we didn't have another third county.
Well, if you look at the Cass County, if you look at the Cass County case, there were at least three counties that were involved in that one. At that time in 1992, the definition of reside is the same as it was and is today.
Can I ask a question before you get into the details?
Yes.
This was, it first started out as an administrative decision.
Correct.
And then was appealed to district court.
That is correct.
So what are we reviewing, the district court's decision or the administrative decision?
The district court's decision.
Why is that?
Because no direct appeal can come from the administrative decision.
And both of those, administrative decision and the district court, was fact intensive.
Yes.
So what's our standard of review?
De novo.
We know we're the third fact finder.
Yes.
First the administrative, then the district court, and us.
Yep. And we acknowledge that there's
pretty uncomfortable in that kind of position. probably obvious.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it wasn't an answer I liked, but it did answer the question.
Is that because it's a mix? I did try to dig into this. Is that because it's a mixed question of law and fact that we have de novo review over this question? I don't know that the case law is entirely clear, but I do think every case says that we have de novo review over what is residence in this situation. Is that?
So I struggled with that during briefing as well. You know, I really think that the issue is one of statutory interpretation. The court needs to figure out what reside means. And of course, SM did not do that for us. That was...
Apparently we did that some years back in Clay County case.
Yep, and I'm going to suggest to you that you have. Because under the same exact statutory language, it's Cass County, right?
It wasn't Moorhead. I thought it was Moorhead.
No. I believe the juvenile is residing in Cass County. Mom might have been in Wright County. And he was placed.
So it's the Cass County case we're talking about.
Yes.
Not Clay County.
Cass County. Yep. So, you know, as when the court began its analysis there, and something that, you know, we argued below and the district court examined, was the Bell v. Ganaway case, which is a voter residency case. The Cass County court said, we're not going to apply that because voter registration, voter residency relates more to adults than it is to minor. And at the time, it was the minor's residence that determined, who the county of financial responsibility.
So do you agree that the Cass County case sort of rewrote the statutory scheme, or at least filled in the gaps of the statutory scheme in the case of this kind?
It has, and the statute hasn't been amended since, and I couldn't find anything that this court has done to change that. And precisely what they said is there must be some indication a person intends to stay in a location or has no present intent to leave for a location to be a residence or abode. So it kind of took the statutory language and addressed Judge Larson's question. You know, the statute says abode. We have this other term that this court has interpreted to reside or residence to be, which includes, where they live. The specific language that the court looked to in the voter registration case, but did not endorse, is a residence is where the individual lives and usually sleeps. And in this case, we would suggest that based upon the facts, that is not Polk County. I'm not saying it's Benton County. I'm not saying it's Sherburne County. I'm not saying that it is Stearns County. So I do want to visit about, the facts and the circumstances.
I do wonder, though, before we leave Cass County, I do wonder if Cass County resolved my question about whether you need to have a physical dwelling or not under the statute. So they said there must be some indication that a person intends to stay in a location or has no present intent to leave for it to be a residence or an abode. And then we've subsequently determined abode to mean a physical dwelling. And so I just wonder if Cass County really does completely close the loop on the question here, which is under the definition, where does an unhoused person live? Because I think everyone here agrees that that an unhoused person would be entitled to services somewhere.
Just as they are entitled to vote, and it could very well been that if Cass County had not involved determining the residence of a minor, that they would have used Bell v. Ganaway to say, just as people are entitled to social services, people are entitled to vote.
But the issue isn't really whether somebody is entitled to social services. The issue is who has to pay for it.
That's right. And we got five kids. It is. But, I believe that, so I think an extension, Judge Larson, of Cass County using the analysis that they looked at but failed to adopt, and if it was in there, it had to have some import at some point, would give everyone a residence. It's where they usually sleep and where they are at.
And that's under the Bell case?
Yep, Bell v. Ganaway, internally cited in the Cass County.
So, Mr. Anderson, what would you have us do about the lease?
About the lease?
Yes. You say it's not determinative?
No, I don't think it is determinative, and for these reasons. One, the first time that the lease was ever mentioned was after Ms. Connor had a CD evaluation and was looked at for commitment, was advised that if a positive tox screen came back, then her child would be taken away. This was one time that the lease was used to do that. The second time, there was a positive tox screen on October 17th. Again, Ms. Connor was here in Benton County, and she used it again to say, well, I'm moving to Glenwood. Western Prairie Human Services never had any physical contact with Ms. Connor, and I'm not saying that that's determinative, but the one conversation that they had with her on October 24th indicated that she was coming back. You know, this is
coming back where?
Coming back to Glenwood.
Okay.
But the evidence is clear that she never did.
Well, and at that time, she also acknowledged that she did never ride there.
Yep, that is correct. She didn't have a ride, but somehow she indicated that she was going to return to Glenwood. She didn't ask for a ride. She indicated that she was going to enroll her children in school, things that people would do if they intend on residing in a place. We don't know. What we know is that prior to leasing the apartment in Glenwood, she was living at a homeless shelter. We don't know what her personal belongings were, but in the conversations in...
Do you know where that was located?
Precisely, I do not know. We agree that Glenwood is in Pope County, and if this court determines that she intended to reside there and had no intent to reside somewhere else, that it would be Pope County. You know, after the conversation, the decision was made to enroll the children in St. Cloud. And there had been no activity.
St. Cloud, Benton, Stearns, or Sherburn?
I don't know. When she came in to have her sixth child, she did not list a Glenwood address. She listed a Benton County address. The record shows that the people who were caring for her five other children during the time that they were all supposed to be living in Glenwood indicated that she frequents apartments in a location in Benton County.
She what? Frequented an apartment?
Frequented an apartment. You know,
what does that mean?
That's where she would sleep. That's where she would hang her hat. So, honestly, based upon the circumstances, I think that the October 5 lease is simply a ruse. She did nothing to comply with the lease after October 5. In our briefing, we looked at the financial circumstances. You know, she received about $835 in Social Security and was committing to a lease that would expend at least $550 of her disposable income per month.
Well, that lease wasn't going to last very long with that income.
No. You know, but a lease had the desired effect that Benton County Social Services was no longer keeping tabs on Ashley Connor. Benton County Human Services told her that if you have a dirty drug screen, we are going to take your child.
So the lease was sort of a ruse to say, I am going to have housing. Don't take my kids. Don't worry about the drugs. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. Anderson?
I think that the circumstances flesh that out here.
Okay.
That if I move to Glenwood.
I'm finished with Benton County.
If I intend to come back to St. Cloud, which the record shows that she did, Western Prairie Human Services is going to be looking for me, but they're not going to find me in Glenwood. One contact. You know, the record also shows how important Ms. Connor's children are to her. After she was notified that her sixth child was being placed on a hold, she was going to sign herself out against medical advice in order to get her other five children. She knew where they were at, but she was advised at that point that they were also likewise placed on a hold.
I have one more question with regard to interpreting the term residence, do you think that, I think the problem is a lot of these old cases have to do with prior to where was a minor physically present? And it seems like post that, we haven't really wrestled with what does reside mean when it was the parents, probably because parents usually have it's easier to tell where their established place of abode is. But the Supreme Court had the case of Ramsey County versus Sherburne County, where they perhaps had some more helpful language to your position in terms of you need to have more than just physical presence, but you're actually looking at where the county was receiving the benefits of the individual's residence before they came in need of public assistance. Do you think that that's a case that we can look to in interpreting? And I think that was applying 256D.18. Do you think, and the district court looked at this case and they found it helpful in determining what residence means for this statute. Do you think that was appropriate to look at this case in sussing out what the legislature meant when it defined the word reside?
I think in part, and I don't think that, I think to some extent it would be in line with Cass County and at least the dicta in Cass County referencing Bell v. Ganaway, that, you know, there is a component of intent that needs to be present.
Well, I guess my question is Ramsey a more analogous situation than Bell? Because Ramsey was actually dealing with a social services statute and a statute that I believe defined reside as the county where the individual resides, as opposed to having sort of other factors that you look at.
I certainly think that it is persuasive. Of course, you know, the statutory schemes are things that, you know, are unique. We would acknowledge, as argued by Benton County, that this has no durational requirement, and we're not discounting that. If Ms. Connor had moved to Glenwood and enrolled her children in school and was put on bed rest and had been doctoring in St. Cloud, I think we have a different case, but I don't think that the facts are just there.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
Ms. Meyer, you'll have the last word once we get some.
To address your previous question regarding unhoused individuals, I believe that their abode is where they have their personal belongings, where they have set up camp. And if that is currently at an emergency shelter, then most social services agencies are going to interpret that as their residence, their county of residence. I know that that's how we typically have interpreted that. Since they don't have a permanent dwelling, it's where they make home. And where they make home is where they maybe stay overnight, where they have all their personal belongings, and it's clear that they don't have an established residence in any other county. So I think it would be very difficult to imply an intent statute requirement to an unhoused person, because what if it's housing services that they're applying for? Well, clearly they're showing intent to leave. And if they are seeking out those housing services, they could be placed in Sherburne County, Benton County, Stearns County, a county outside of this regional area. So I think based on the circumstances, which is what I would request the court adopt.
Do you think that the interpretation that you're adopting is inconsistent with Cass County or even Ramsey County?
I think the determination in Cass County would lead to absurd results as it applies to unhoused individuals, where if they're seeking housing services, their intent is clearly to leave. They're not intending to necessarily stay in one county. I think that if we adopt it for individuals that are chemically dependent or mentally ill, again, we may not know what their intent is to stay the next night, Currently, they're located here. They have all their personal belongings here, and we are going to offer and provide them services. And I believe when you've got County A and County B, and you've got an intent to leave, but a family member requires services prior to actually moving, that implying that intent requirement would leave us in a state of limbo. So I think you have to examine the circumstances in each case. And I do think that that wasn't examined in the Cass County decision. And regarding the Ramsey County—
And what is your best case for when you determine residence, you look at the circumstances of each case when the definition of reside is physical abode?
Yep. So it's clear in certain circumstances when you've got someone who owns their own house or leases an apartment, has paid a down payment, has paid rent, and that they are intending to live there and they've moved there. So you would interpret that as their established abode and the fact that they don't have an established abode in any other county. Did I answer that correctly for you?
Well, I guess where do you derive that we have the ability to look at the circumstances of each case? What is the legal authority that you have that residence isn't? The definition says physical abode. In this case, the only place that she had a physical abode was in Polk County. Therefore, wherever you have a physical abode is where you reside and you don't reside anywhere else. And what you're saying is that's not right because you agree that unhoused people also get often need social services. And so you're saying that we should read into the statute that where you're residing is based on the circumstances of each case, and that might not necessarily mean you have a physical dwelling. Is there case, like, are you getting that from published case law?
Yes, in Re TW, okay. Under the Act, identifying the county of financial responsibility for social services depends on the circumstances of the case. And then in parens, it states containing that the Act contains five different definitions of county of residence and financial responsibility.
So that's broad. So you're saying that we should take that broad definition and apply that to the specific definition of residence and that we look at the circumstances of each case. Because you agree that TW doesn't say when determining residence, we look at the circumstances of each case.
But you're always, the whole point of the Act is you're always determining residence. Where is someone residing, and therefore here's the county.
Well, responsibility. I think the reason this maybe doesn't come up is usually people, one of the other circumstances is often applicable because they're already receiving social services. And so there's less of a conflict in terms of which county has responsibility. I think this is kind of a unique case in that she wasn't receiving social services in light of her circumstances. But okay, so I understand that. I do have one other question, if I may. The DHS, made a statement that it's Benton County that bears the burden of proving residence. Do you agree that that's a correct statement of the law?
There isn't any statement within the statute that talks about the burden. It really just directs the counties to figure out who the county of financial responsibility is. And that's dependent on the facts.
So you think DHS got it legally wrong that Benton County bears the burden of proof? So to the extent that the record is opaque, there's no burden shifting that happens here.
I have never seen evidence of that in any case law. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Meyer. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.